Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, September 11th, 2018. I'm very honored to be reading on this day in particular. So today we'll start off with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, Downtown Champaign, Coming Attractions, Mega Project Covers Whole Nine Yards. Step one of approval process comes tonight. This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Champaign. The name of the mega development proposed for downtown Champaign South Side, The Yards. That's what it's called. It's YARDS, The Yards. The price tag? A cool $200 million. The status? At least some of the details will be shared at a joint meeting of the City Council and the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District Board tonight. This will be the first of what's anticipated to be three meetings leading up to finalizing two agreements, one between the city and the developer, which is Core Spaces, and the other between the city and the MTD. Making presentations at tonight's meeting will be the MTD, the developer, and the Division of Intercollegiate Athletics, city officials said. Chicago-based Core Spaces, a national developer in educational markets that's been largely behind the scenes until this point, is partnering with the man who's been the more public face of the downtown Champaign project, Hans, and forgive me, I'm going to mispronounce this last name, I hope I don't, but Grotelution, that's Grotelution, Hans Grotelution. According to a video by the developer, the Yard's name was chosen as a nod to the city's history as a railroad town, and City Planning and Development Director, or said City Planning and Development Director, Bruce Knight. The Yards has its genesis in a redevelopment project pitched by Grotelution in 2015 for the city-owned parking lot at Washington and Walnut Streets. The project was later shifted to the current site, about 11 acres surrounding the MTD's Illinois Terminal building, and grew in scope. The current projected cost of the development assumes it will include a 175-room hotel, convention space for up to 1,000 people, 100-plus apartments, 154,000 square feet of retail and office space, a 5,000-seat multipurpose arena that could potentially house a Division I Illinois hockey program, parking decks, and an expansion of the Illinois Terminal building, according to a memo prepared by Knight. Also included would be a parking deck for Christie Clinic employees at Clark and State Streets to replace clinic employee parking being lost to the development, Knight said. The project site, bordered generally by University Avenue, and that's University Avenue on the north, the Canadian National Tracks to the east, Springfield Avenue to the south, and Neal and Walnut Streets to the west, is all vacant land or homed parking lots and aging buildings. And it's an area that has seen little reinvestment, according to Knight. The current value of the entire site is about $930,000, and it generates $12,220 in property taxes for the city each year, he said. A $200 million plus public-private development in the downtown would have a significant long-term financial impact, depending on what kind of assistance it will take to make it viable, and also yield food and beverage sales and hotel-motel tax money for the city, according to Knight. Some of what the city has already learned from consultants is that a development of this magnitude would raise Champaign's stature as an event destination in the region and enhance downtown as a business location, he said. At tonight's meeting, city staff will be looking for the council's okay to work on agreements with the developer and the MTD, subject to final council approval, Knight said. At the second session coming up on this project in late October or early November, details about the financial assistance being sought from the city and a financial analysis will be presented, he said. The third session, to be held in December, will be to present draft agreements with the developers and the MTD to the council. The MTD plans to share a broad summary of its terminal expansion plans, at least in concept, with the council tonight, according to MTD Managing Director Carl, that's K-A-R-L, Nat, that's G-N-A-D-T. The transit district doesn't yet have such details as architectural and engineering plans for this project, he said. Final costs and other details will depend in part on how much of $25 million in federal grant money being sought is awarded to help foot the bill, Nat said. The MTD needs a roomier Illinois terminal because it doesn't have enough spaces for the buses coming in and out at certain times of the day, he said. A larger terminal would accommodate the current bus volume and provide some room to grow, and also make it safer for other traffic and pedestrians in the terminal vicinity, Nat said. The next headline reads, Iconic Hotel. Auction of Landmark starts today. This article is written by Ben Sigderman and is based out of Urbana. With an auction set to begin today for the Landmark Hotel, officials are hoping the sequel's a bigger hit than the original. About a dozen developers have toured the property at 210 South Ray Street, Urbana, which failed to attract a high enough bid at an auction in December. There's been a lot of interest, said Rick George, a broker with the firm Avison Young in Chicago, who represents the hotel's owner, Zhao Jin Yun. I think we're going to have a decent number of qualified bidders, probably six or eight groups, he said, with interest both locally and across the nation. The online auction runs from today to Thursday on 10x.com, with a minimum bid of $600,000. Yun, that's Y-U-A-N, also has an undisclosed reserve price that needs to be met. In December, his reserve price wasn't met, despite bidding reaching $3.95 million, well above the minimum bid of $1.2 million. The owner has lowered his expectations significantly, George said. He expects most of the bidding to happen Thursday. There won't be many bids tomorrow, he said, Monday. Those with experience with online real estate auctions, they wait until the last day and won't get involved until the end of the process. After the auction, the winning bidder will put down a deposit, and the transaction will typically close within 30 days, George said. He said the city of Urbana has been helpful in working with the interested developers. Mayor Diane Marlin said she has met with several of them. The staff and I have met with at least a dozen different developers, she said. They've personally been to the city to meet with us, and we provided them with all the information we can give them. We've given tours of downtown and expressed to all of them the need for a high-quality, active project at the site, she said. The hotel has been closed since April 2016 and has been for sale since 2015, when Yun had an asking price of $5.4 million. He bought it in 2010 for $600,000 and renovated most of the rooms, but returned $1 million in incentives to the city after not reopening the hotel's restaurant and conference center. The historic hotel opened in 1923 as the Urbana Lincoln Hotel. It was later bought by Carson Peary Scott & Company in 1965, before being sold to the Jumer Hotel chain in the 1970s. It was sold again in 2001 and has cycled through various owners since then. Last year, a New Jersey-based firm put together a $24.5 million plan to redevelop the hotel, with $9.5 million from the city, but Marlin rejected the plan due to its cost to Urbana and the risk it would have placed on taxpayers. Marlin said that whether this auction is successful in finding a buyer is in the owner's hands, quote-unquote. This process is going to determine the market value for this property, she said. We'll see what happens. On the block, this is a quick follow-up, recent sales prices for Urbana's Landmark Hotel, according to the Champaign County Assessor. In the year 2001, the purchase price, or sale price, was $2,700,000. In 2008, $1,300,000. And in 2010, $600,000. Next headline. The next headline reads, University of Illinois, Urbana Campus back in magazine's top 50. This article is written by Julie Worth and is based out of Urbana. The University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign is back in the top 50 in the annual U.S. News & World Report college rankings, reversing a two-year slide. The latest rankings, published Monday, have the U of I's flagship campus at number 46 among national universities, up from 52 last year, and third highest of the 14 Big Ten schools. Among public universities nationally, the U of I is tied for 13th. In 2016, the U of I was 44th overall, and the previous year it tied for 41st place. U of I officials had blamed the 11-point drop on the two-year state budget stalemate, which drastically curtailed the university's funding and forced significant budget costs. The drop wasn't as large as it seemed, with just a few points separating schools last year. Illinois was tied with Penn State at number 52, just behind six schools at number 46, and four schools were tied at number 42. Chancellor Robert Jones welcomed the recognition, saying the rankings demonstrate that any discussion of the nation's best universities includes Illinois. But our top priority and our focus will always be on providing our undergraduate students with educational experiences that prepare them for the careers and lives they want to have. Their votes are ones that matter most to us, Jones said. This year, the U of I is tied for 46th with two other schools, the University of Georgia and Pepperdine University in Malibu, California. Northwestern comes in at number 10, tied with Johns Hopkins. The only other Big Ten school ahead of the U of I is Michigan at number 27. Private schools dominate the top 20, led by Princeton, Harvard, and four schools tied for third, the University of Chicago, Columbia, Massachusetts, Institute of Technology, and Yale. UCLA is the highest-rated public institution at number 19. The only other two that crack the top 25 are Cal Berkeley at number 22 and the University of Virginia at number 25. The California university system improved this year because it graduated high proportions of low-income students new to the methodology used to rank schools this year, U.S. News said. Five of the top 10 schools on the public's list are in California. The U.S. News rankings evaluate schools in 16 measures of academic quality using hundreds of data points. The magazine system was updated to emphasize student outcomes, weighted at 35% rather than 30% previously. To measure how well schools support low-income students through graduation, it added social mobility indicators, quote-unquote, including graduation rates of students who receive need-based federal Pell grants compared to students who don't. U.S. News also eliminated a school's acceptance rate as a factor, which was previously weighted at 1.25%, and reduced the weight of expert opinions, SAT and ACT scores, and more. U of I officials were happy to see that shift, saying it dovetails with the school's emphasis. It seems to me that if you're really trying to decide what constitutes the best university, you should be looking directly at the success and progress students find once they get to that university. We're always very proud of our high graduation and retention rates, said Chris Harris, Director of Strategic Communications for the U of I. The U of I's ranking went up for best undergraduate teaching, tied at 43 with Michigan State, Wisconsin, and six other schools. But that was lower than three other Big Ten competitors, Michigan at 19, Purdue at 21, and Northwestern at 26. The U of I is at number 111 among best value schools, likely because of its still relatively high in-state tuition. Other individual U of I rankings? The undergraduate College of Engineering program is number 6, tied with Michigan and Carnegie Mellon, and ahead of all other Big Ten schools. Engineering had at least 5 programs in the top 5. Civil Engineering at number 3, Environmental Engineering, number 3, Electrical Engineering, number 5, Agricultural Biological Engineering, 5 tie, and Materials Science Engineering, 5 tie. The Accounting program is number 2, tied with Brigham Young University and behind the top-ranked University of Texas at Austin. And the Gies College of Business undergraduate program is number 18, tied with Wisconsin and Minnesota, and down from number 15 last year. Around the state, Illinois schools ranked among the top 200 national universities by U.S. News and World Report. At number 3, University of Chicago. At number 10, Northwestern. Number 46, Illinois. Number 80, Loyola. Number 96, Illinois Institute of Technology. Number 129, University of Illinois, Chicago, and at 171, Illinois State. And now let's take a look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soulje, S-O-U-L-J-E, and his column on the weather front. Hurricane Florence continues to barrel toward the Atlantic seaboard, likely reaching the southern mid-Atlantic coast Thursday or Friday. Florence is expected to make landfall as a major hurricane, resulting in coastal damage due to wind and storm surge. Even greater impacts may be realized after Florence moves inland and stalls, leading to potential flooding. Most of the remainder of the U.S. will experience dry weather through week's end. Exceptions include the Northeast, where heavy rain will linger, and western Gulf Coast region, which will remain wet with flooding. Heat in the west will build east, reaching the nation's midsection as cool air invades California and the Northwest. Today, 77 degrees. Mostly sunny, east to southeast wind 7 to 14 miles per hour. Overnight, a few clouds, southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 78, the low will be 55. Sunny, southeast wind 6 to 12 miles per hour. Overnight, fair. Thursday, the high will be 79, the low will be 58. It will be sunny. Friday, high of 80, low of 61. Mostly sunny. And Saturday, the high will be 81, and the low will be 62, and it will be sunny. And now, top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. They're golfing for a good cause today at Urbana Country Club, where a full field is expected for Flight Star's annual charity event. Proceeds from Patriot Golf Day benefit Folds of Honor, which provides scholarships to children and spouses of fallen and disabled service members. It's an appropriate touch on a solemn day. Spicing up the fundraising, a lunchtime raffle that will see golf balls, each individually marked, dropped from a helicopter 50 feet above the first fairway. Closest to the pin has never been so exciting or loud. The golf ball finishing the closest to the target will win 50% entry fees, with the other 50% being donated to the Folds of Honor, UCC Director of Development and Membership Tyler White said. We'll tell you how much money was raised and what it looked like later in the week. At newsgazette.com, here's what was trending at our website, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,301,236 page views. The three top stories. 1. Live, Obama at the U of I. 2. Once again, South End Wendy's shutters. And 3. Number of local STD cases up significantly. The three top sports stories. 1. Live, Western Illinois. 2. Suspended Illini putting in work. 3. Thomas has left U of I football team. The three top videos. 1. Obama visits University of Illinois. 2. Dudex injury, hard to understand. 3. Illini offense found different rhythm to beat WIU. And the three top photo galleries. 1. Obama visits the U of I. 2. High school football, Central versus Centennial. And 3. Counting Crows at SFC, that's the State Farm Center. In history, area history, in 1918, Urbana brothers Paul R. Hobart, H-O-B-A-R-T, and Ralph R. Hobart met in France after landing there with different divisions of the U.S. Army. In 1968, Vernon Barkstall, executive director of the Urban League, said counseling would be available for the 268 students arrested at the Illini Union. In 2003, 16 attorneys had applied to become Champaign County's newest associate judge. The list included 2 local attorneys who were already running for a vacant circuit judgeship, 3 current county assistant state's attorneys, and the county's public defender. And in international history, today's highlight, on September 11, 2001, on America's single worst day of terrorism, nearly 3,000 people were killed as 19 Al-Qaeda members hijacked 4 passenger jetliners, sending 2 planes smashing into New York's World Trade Center, 1 into the Pentagon, and the 4th into a field in western Pennsylvania. And on this date, in 1297, Scottish rebels led by William Wallace and Andrew Moray defeated English troops in the Battle of Stirling Bridge during the First War of Scottish Independence. The next headline is actually a photograph. It says, Unit 4, Beyond the Blueprints. And they're off. Burnham Mansion is still standing, for now, but much of the rest of the neighborhood surrounding Champaign Central has a different look today than it did Monday. This building, at 203 North Lynn, was among 4 raised as Unit 4's construction work kicked into high gear. And we'll read more about that in just a moment. But there's a picture of a bulldozer and a building that's been demolished, but you can still see a little bit of the brick porch and the brick stairs leading up to the porch, but most of the building has been demolished. And now, as a follow-up to that image, Unit 4 Schools, Demise of Burnham Mansion, due today. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign. Goodbye, Burnham Mansion. Despite long-lived protests of its demolition and a short-lived plan to spare it, destruction of the 130-year home begins in earnest today, according to Champaign School Board President Chris Klappel, who made the announcement near the end of Monday night's board meeting. We, I think, just discovered that this afternoon that demolition will begin today, he said. The raising of the home at 603 West Church Street will make way for the expansion of Central High School, one of six capital projects approved by voters in a 2016 referendum. That $183.4 million package was the topic of three items on Monday's agenda: estimate approvals for Southside Elementary and McKinley Field, as well as construction contracts for other sites of demolition near Central. The board unanimously approved an under-budget estimate of the Southside renovation project. Promised to cost $11 million, current estimates have clocked in at $11,095,448, which architects told board members was made possible by shrinking square footage in the plan, but without sacrificing programming. But a vote on McKinley Field was tabled after architects presented designs for the project that didn't include lights, along with a latex surface track, synthetic turf football field, and expanded bleacher capacity. Lights were among the $6.2 million of updates promised to and approved by voters in the 2016 referendum. For me, the lights need to be in there, Klopel said. That was certainly something that we promised. Architects set the lights aside in an alternate plan, estimating that adding them would increase the cost of a project that came in just under its $6.1 million budget by nearly $400,000. What you see here is a good collaborative effort between all the teams in the district, Greg Doolin, D-O-O-L-I-N, a representative for O'Shea Builders, told the board. It's been a good team effort, and we're happy with where we are on budget. Board members discussed the possible overage, with several saying lights were a non-negotiable part of the project. We discussed the athletic fields being separate from Central for years and years, and a lot of people came together, and a lot of people had to compromise, board member Kathy Shannon said. I feel like some of the people who made the biggest compromises, people who wanted parking and athletics at Central, I feel like we need to get those people the minimum of what we promised them. It wouldn't be fair if we took something away that was so vital to them. Even if the budget does go over, Klopel added, adding lights was still feasible in the overall budget. I'm not sitting up here saying, lights, 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 without some indication that we could do that, he said. The vote on McKinley Field work was tabled until the September 24th board meeting. The next headline reads, aggravated domestic battery, woman jailed for stabbing husband. This article is written by Tim Dittman and is based out of Rantoul. A Rantoul woman remained at the Champaign County Jail Monday afternoon after being accused of stabbing her husband in the chest during an argument over the weekend. Prosecutors on Monday charged Sandra Findlay, that's F-I-N-D-L-A-Y, 38, with aggravated domestic battery. A judge left her bond at $75,000 and gave her until September 18th to hire an attorney. Authorities said the incident happened shortly before 5 a.m. Saturday at the couple's home in the 1200 block of Brookshire Drive. They say Findlay and her husband started arguing, and then the husband, who has not been named, grabbed her by the neck, after which she took a knife from the dishwasher and stabbed him in the chest. Police say the wound is not life-threatening. The next headline reads, Jason Van Dyke, first five jurors chosen to sit in murder trial. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Jury selection began Monday in the murder trial of a white Chicago police officer who shot a black teenager, Laquan, that's L-A-Q-U-A-N, McDonald, 16 times. If the pace of proceedings on the first day was any indication, it could be a while before testimony begins. By late afternoon, attorneys representing Officer Jason Van Dyke and prosecutors agreed on five people to sit on the jury. Three were women: a Hispanic mother of three young children who said she respects police officers, a white woman who works as a record keeper and said she wanted to see evidence before forming an opinion, and a white woman who said she saw the video of the shooting but hadn't made up her mind. Later in the day, two men were selected: an Asian financial analyst who said on his questionnaire that everyone, including police officers, must abide by the law, and a white man who was gay and said he didn't know much about the case. Prosecutors and attorneys for Officer Jason Van Dyke, that's Van Dyke, two words, Van, D-Y-K-E, agreed on two jurors: a white woman who said she worked as a record keeper and wanted to see evidence before forming an opinion, and a Hispanic mother of three young children who said she could be fair and respects police officers. I think they just do their job, the Hispanic woman told the court. Others, though, acknowledged that it would be difficult to be fair and impartial because of what they know about the 2014 shooting. The release of dashcam footage of Van Dyke repeatedly shooting McDonald and the police department and Mayor Rahm Emanuel fought to keep private sparked widespread outrage and led to large protests and the firing of Chicago's police superintendent. The next headline reads, Illinois football. Bush the guy if he is healthy. Starting quarterback status uncertain for week 3. This article is written by Scott Ritchie and is based out of Champaign. A.J. Bush Jr. wanted to play in the second half of Illinois' 34-14 win against Western Illinois. He made that clear by the number of times he asked a coach on the sideline to tell offensive coordinator Rod Smith he wanted back in the game. Bush's hamstring injury, though, kept him off the field the final three quarters against the Leathernecks. It also created the question, at least as of Monday afternoon, of whether he'll play Saturday in Chicago when the Illini, 2-0, face South Florida, 2-0, at 2:30 p.m. at Soldier Field. We'll see how it goes with him this week, Illinois coach Lovey Smith said about Bush. We have to get to the practice field and kind of see a little bit. AJ will tell you it's not as bad, but whenever you can't finish a game, though, there's concern. He's making a lot of progress. What isn't in question is Bush's role if he is healthy. Rod Smith made that clear even after true freshman MJ Rivers II, the second, showed he could run the offense effectively when he made his Illini debut and let his own come-from-behind victory. If he's ready to go, then obviously he's the guy, Rod Smith said. We have to wait and see how he responds and if he's 100%. AJ will tell you he could have played. We just wanted to make sure. He was limping pretty good, and I'd rather have someone full speed than half speed out there, particularly for what we do offensively. I'm not a doctor and don't claim to be. The athletic trainers have to give us clearance before we'd ever put him back in. There's got to be certain protocols, certain levels, to ensure the kid's safety. Rivers gives Illinois a viable option, though, if Bush is unable to play against South Florida. The 6'4", 215-pound Texan led the Illini on 5 scoring drives against the Leathernecks, including a pair of touchdowns to fellow freshman Edwin Carter, who Lovey Smith said is out for the season Monday with a significant knee injury he sustained making his second touchdown catch against Western Illinois. MJ can throw the football pretty well, Rod Smith said. He's got to calm down his feet some in the pocket. He's got to learn to trust protection a little bit better at times and learn to get rid of the football quicker. But overall, from his first outing, I thought he had a pretty good showing. Rivers asserted himself with his decision-making and how comfortable he was running the Illinois offense as the Illini's training camp progressed and into the first 2 weeks of the season. That had him ahead of fellow true freshman quarterback Matt Robinson as Bush's backup. That role, though, isn't guaranteed. Rod Smith purposely didn't let either Rivers or Robinson know who was number two. That won't necessarily change, even though Rivers was the first in when Bush went down. I like to keep them on the edge, Rod Smith said. I tell them all, be prepared to be the starter. If your name gets called, it's time to go out and perform. That way, there's never any, well, I'm not going. I want them to stay on the edge. I want them to be ready to go at a minute's notice. Illinois's young quarterbacks still lean on Bush for leadership. He provided that against Western Illinois, even though he was sidelined. AJ's a stud, Rod Smith said. He's a competitor. Trust me, he wanted to be out there. He is also a first-class teammate. He's there to help the quarterbacks. He's there to be another set of eyes. He's there to be another voice to those guys. News Gazette Top 10 High School Football. 1. Gibson City, Melvin Sibley. 2. Tuscola. 3. Monticello. 4. Argenta Oriana. 5. St. Joseph Ogden. 6. Fisher. 7. Bismarck Henning, Rossville Alvin. 8. Salt Fork. 9. Prairie Central. And 10. Clinton. I just wanted to give you that quick rundown. That's News Gazette ranked top 10 high school football teams in the area. They all have perfect records at the moment. Winning records, that is. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette for today, Tuesday, September 11th, 2018. We thank you very much for listening. I'll be back in just a moment with the reading of part two of the News Gazette, so please stay with us. Thank you very much again, and we hope you have a wonderful day.